All right, super friends, we are very proud to announce that our next comic book called Science is now on Kickstarter. That is now on Kickstarter on September 12th.
Yay!
If you got to listen to this a little bit early, you might be able to hear, you know, I don't know. Time and dates are strange, and time and dates are perfect for Science. It is our comic book. It is for young adults and teenagers and adults, and it's very kid-friendly, but it has lots of stuff. It is the story of Tamsin, who's a 14-year-old girl who is going to the most advanced futuristic science school of all time called the Prometheus Institute. But it's not as easy as it sounds because she is one of the smartest people in the world, but she has a crush on her roommate. But her roommate, Garen, has maybe broken through the dimensional barriers of the space-time continuum and could jeopardize the very existence of the school, while her other friend, AJ, is putting on rocket boots, maybe a little bit too, you know, he's not old enough for rocket boots, and he's putting on rocket boots, he shouldn't be doing that. And then there's all these cool little cute flying robots called Stats that will not only teach these kids about science, facts, but they'll teach the readers about cool science facts all over the school. We're really excited about it. It is on Kickstarter right now, and we need your help. Go over to Kickstarter. It's basically letting you pre-order this 90-page comic book that is being printed through. Who is it being printed through, Ashley?
Only the Eisner-nominated Bedside Press, who you may know from such amazing books as Secret Loves of Geek Girls. I'm sorry, I just had a total brain fart, guys. And they're really, really super amazing. We've wanted to work with them forever. We're very honored that they're going to be printing our book and that we're joining their catalog. But the only way that we can do it is through the magic of Kickstarter.
Yeah, we have lots of times we do these live streams. We do, you know, little Q&A sessions and stuff like that on Instagram. And people are always like, when's your next comic book? When's your next comic book? When's your next comic book?
Right now.
Right now. Right now. ScienceComicBook.com will take you directly to the Kickstarter. Or you can go to Kickstarter and search Science. It's there. And we need your help because, again, the only time this book will be printed is through this Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And we need your funds. We are not even paying ourselves any of the Kickstarter funds. We don't get a paycheck from this book, but we love comic books so much, and we love this idea so much. I kind of got fascinated with the sciencey, pulpy adventures of the 1950s, you know, the Isaac Asimov stories and stuff like that, and I wanted to combine that with sort of like a Star Trek Fantastic Four feel, mm-hmm. and that's where this book was born. And Science is a really great one-shot book. I think it's really fun, and we have some great rewards. So, you know, you can buy the book. You can buy the book with prints. You can also, if you want to write a comic book like yourself, we have lots of great script reviews. A couple of them from Shea Fontana, who is the writer of what, Ashley?
Only a little book called Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And the phenomenon that is DC Superhero Girls.
Yes. We also have a script review from Joshua Hale Fialkoff, who wrote The Bunker. He's also a TV writer on The Code, which
also a personal mentor.
Yeah, personal mentor of the book. And he will review 20 pages of a comic book script and a TV script,
wow. either,
whichever one you want to do. But big time, we have a portfolio review from Mitch Garrett, the artist of Sheriff Babylon, Mr. Miracle. We have a script review from Tom King, the writer of Batman. And we have a script review from Cullen Bunn, the writer of X-Men Blue. So we have some great rewards. Also, if you want to appear in the comic book, we have cameos. You will get drawn into this comic book as a student of the Prometheus Institute.
Yeah, different level cameos.
It's different levels, which I think is quite amazing. So go over to sciencecomicbook.com. We are so excited. If you enjoy our stories here, you will enjoy this story over there. And it means the world that you can be pre-ordered in the book. But we need all the students of the Mind University to go to sciencecomicbook.com. Go to Kickstarter. Help us make this book a reality. The sooner you do that, the sooner this book can be made, and the sooner we can, you know, create stretch rewards and stuff like that. And tell your friends, if you right now, if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, I can't support your book, I'm poor, I get it, I've been there, or you're in between jobs,
we've all been there,
I totally understand that, then all I ask is that you share it on Twitter, mm-hmm. share it on Facebook, mm-hmm. talk about it on your Instagram. A social media share is just as important as you donating to the book. It helps get the word out. So sciencecomicbook.com, it's our next comic book. We're very excited about it. We hope you're excited about it too. So go there and help us make this comic book a reality. And now to the show. What are the greatest single issue comic books ever? We're going to tell you in this episode of Geek History Lesson. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Funnybook Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we teach you one character, construct, or story from pop culture. Everything you need to know about it in about an hour, except today because we're doing a special list episode.
That's right. We are doing a special list episode. We thought that since we were starting a comic book ourselves, sciencecomicbook.com over there on Kickstarter as our next graphic novel, that you just heard a big ad for it on top of the show. We thought we'd talk about single issue comic books because comic books nowadays have become this thing where, you know, you write six issues and you put it in a graphic novel, or you write six issues and you put it in a trade, and it's become all serialized. But comic books are a singular storytelling device.
Mm-hmm.
20 pages to 30 pages, somewhere in there, usually, you get a singular story to tell you a powerful story. And we want to talk about these best single issues of comic books.
Also, because I'm going to be honest, people ask us for this all the time.
Do they really have best single issues?
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about best comic books in general. Because, like, you know, you won't hear, like, well, you might hear, but you won't hear, like, all of Watchmen. You'll hear, like, oh, Watchmen number six.
Right. And we do have an episode that is something like top five or best issue, best comic books
for new readers.
For new readers.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a longer haul. But I've seen people ask us this, not formally requested, but we've been asked this in live chats before. People ask us this live. So it was a question that we knew we wanted to get around to eventually, and it just slotted in perfectly.
Yeah, it seemed to fit in perfect again with the launch of our Kickstarter. I thought that was like for science. I thought that was like a perfect way. Now, of course, this list is our favorites.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an objective list. I don't know how I would do an objective list for this because I thought this was really hard for me.
You'd just be like, I don't know, Detective 27, Action 1.
Action number one is not a great comic book.
ASM 121.
Action comic
books
number one is, oh yeah, I think you'd have to get to the character appearances, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's our opinion.
But I found this list to be very hard. I personally, and I know we didn't make this a qualifier, we didn't put any rules on this.
No.
I personally tried to pick issues that I thought could stand on their own, that you wouldn't need to know much information before reading this.
I did it.
And that's fine. And that's totally cool.
I did, though. I tried to include big characters that I thought the listeners would like to know about.
Nah, I didn't do that.
And I included some indie darlings as well.
I bet you a very, very small section of our podcast has read my number one.
Interesting.
I don't think you would ever predict my number one in a million years.
Preacher number one.
No. Preacher number one's okay. It's not great. All right. Before we get to our list, though, we have to talk about one of our sponsors for this episode, ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is one of our sponsors for today's episode, and they know, like we all do, that hiring is a challenge. But there's one place that you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates, and that place is ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. With their powerful matchmaking technology, ZipRecruiter scans through thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. Now, ZipRecruiter, our sponsor, is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And with results like that, it is no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. Now, right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free.
What?
At this exclusive address, ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. That's ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. Of course, geek history, like our show. And that's, of course, GEEKHISTORY, because ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. So don't forget, go there. You support our show. You get their awesome product. You get yourself some hiring candidates. I believe you can also look for jobs on that site.
Yep.
It's pretty zip. It's pretty recruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. All right. Now we're going to talk about single issue comic books.
Let's do it.
And we're going to talk about that because thanks to ZipRecruiter. Ashley, we're going to start with you. Number five. What issue number is your number five?
Jason, I know that you like this issue, too. So if you would like to jump in. If you'd like
don't
to
you
jump
tell
in
me what I
them,
do and don't like.
Well, you told me about it before I ever read it. So
oh, cool.
I know that you like
all
it.
All right, cool.
It is Ultimate Spider-Man Number 13, Confessions.
The Confession.
Yeah.
Or is it Confessions?
It is Confessions.
Who's the team on this one?
Let me click and I will.
Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley.
Yeah, I didn't know who the artist was.
It's all good.
I couldn't remember if it was Mark Bagley or
I put the teams on all mine. It's all good.
Well, you're smarter than me and I'll be prepped in the future. I picked this issue because I thought
You picked this issue.
I thought I would be remiss to not include a Spider-Man issue.
Okay.
And honestly, for me, there weren't a lot of Marvel issues that came to mind.
Not on mine either.
There's a lot of Marvel single issues that I love. I'm sure we're going to talk about our also-rans.
Save the almost. We'll talk about that on the Patreon, Geeky Cast.
So our patrons will know. I had an almost other Marvel comic.
Cool.
But I think this one is better.
I think I know what that one is, your almost one.
I almost put the night Gwen Stacy died. Because I think that is a very important...
That's the one that I thought.
No, that's not the... I'll tell you in the extra. But I almost put Night Gwen Stacy died because I do think it's a really important issue. I think it shapes who Peter is. But I think if you're only going to read one Spider-Man issue and you want to know what Spider-Man is about...
Spider-Man doesn't appear in that issue at all.
And what Peter Parker is about, I think Confessions does a really good job. This is where you learn that Mary Jane knew who Peter was.
No, this is where Peter tells her.
Tells her.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so sweet. And for me, I love Gwen Stacy, but it's always been Peter Parker and Mary Jane. And I think this is one of the best condensed stories. And he doesn't even like save her from anyone.
No, it's two teenagers sitting on a bed and him telling his girlfriend that he's Spider-Man. That's the entire issue. And then Aunt May keeps opening the door thinking that they're having sex.
Which is what is so perfect about it, because she's in it as well. And they're the two most important figures in Peter who are still living in Peter's life. And to see the interplay between them and to see how much love Peter has for these women and how Mary Jane is willing to support him. And to go with him on this ride, it's just so well crafted. This is what Bendis does best, is character beats. And it's, honestly, it's when characters can talk to each other, because he's a great writer of dialogue.
It's interesting. Bendis once did an interview about that issue, because when it came out, it was pretty controversial that Peter was just like, yo, I'm Spider-Man.
That's insane that people have bad thoughts about that.
Well, it was controversial because people were like, you got to realize that issue came out in like 2002. Mm-hmm. It had never been done. Like, Spider-Man didn't just tell people his identity.
Yeah.
And Bendis made the argument that he was like, if I was 13 and I was Spider-Man, I would have told everybody on my block. He's like,
oh, probably.
I wouldn't have been able to. He's like, if I'm a, you know, I apologize to our teenager listeners. If I'm a dumb hormonal teenager, I would tell everybody that I was a superhero.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to keep my mouth shut.
And we are supposed to believe to a certain extent that people who become superheroes are the best of us. Peter Parker is the best of us. Mm-hmm. But I think it is. And I know this is what you like about Jaime Reyes mm-hmm. as well. I think it's the best of us, what you would tell the people closest to you, because it would matter to them and it would mm-hmm. shape the way they look at you and the way they live
their
lives.
Such an important part of your life.
And I like that Mary Jane receives it with grace. I also think Mary Jane is a character who gets short shrifted. There's not a lot of fantastic Mary Jane moments. Nope. There's a lot of moments where she's kind of dumb.
She gets a lot of great moments in that series, Ultimate Spider-Man.
She does. But I think this is also one of the best Mary Jane moments. And I think for how important she is to the overall lore, it deserves to be celebrated in this way. And I really do think you can read this issue and have not read anything else and you get it. And you get why it matters to these three characters.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
It almost made my list.
Ooh, I'm glad I put it on mine.
It almost made my list, but it did not. I will say this.
I almost put the issue to where Peter dies.
Ooh, that's a good one. Although I will say, I do think that issue, 13, Confessions, mm-hmm. The Confession, or Confessions?
Confessions
is the greatest issue of Spider-Man ever written. Yep. I think I've said that on this podcast before.
Well, you just ruined our best Spider-Man stories ever. Which I guess we'll get around to when...
Haven't we done that already?
Have we?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
We have 227 episodes, people. We can't remember them.
I kind of thought we'd get around to that whenever Spider-Man Prom comes out or whatever that stupid movie's
called. Far From Home Prom.
There you go. I'm sorry.
Great choice. I'm very surprised. Because you're not a huge Ultimate Spider-Man fan, although I've made you read the first couple of volumes.
I just haven't read...
So you would love that series.
Read much of it, cool. but I have read this one, and cool. it's a good one.
It is a good one.
So tell me about your number five. Is it Spider-Man?
No.
Oh, no, you said you had no Marvel.
I haven't said that in the podcast. I said it to you before we started.
Oops.
It's all right. It's okay.
No, you said that earlier.
No Marvel issues made it onto my list.
People are rioting.
I don't care. This is my choice.
heard it here first. Jason doesn't care.
I struggle with this list.
Mm-hmm.
I really did because I wanted things that mattered, but I also wanted things that really hit me in the gut
mm-hmm.
and made me be like, yeah, that's great. My number five is a story called The Boys that happens in Nightwing number 25, written by Chuck Dixon and drawn by Scott McDaniel. The whole issue is Dick Grayson Nightwing and Tim Drake Robin blindfolded on a train riding through Bloodhaven, trying to stay on the train and be able to jump past the bridges and just talking about their life.
This is also on my list.
Great. they bitch about Batman. They have a very human moment. And it's actually kind of realistic towards vigilantes when you think about it's a smart move to make a young vigilante memorize the city sounds that you know if you were blindfolded or kidnapped, mm-hmm. you would know what area of the city you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the last line of the issue is like,
that's a Sherlock. That's lifted from Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Well, Batman is a Sherlock analog, so great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I love that like Dick has a line towards the end where he says, all in a night's work for a Robin.
Yeah.
It's very simple, but to me, like, there is no better example of just a solid, great superhero story
mm-hmm.
that actually means something, that's actually very real. Like, there are no real villain. Like, some thugs hop on top of the train and like come after him,
but there's no rogues. There's no
super villain.
Yeah.
It's these two boys trying to kind of bitching about their lives. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because the 25th issue of a comic book series could have been huge. And I love that Chuck Dixon just was like, no, it's going to be a conversation between two Robins. That's it. Two boys, two brothers, two sons.
Mm-hmm.
Bitching about their crazy dad.
Can you imagine?
I love it. I think it's so great. And I talk about the Nightwing solo series by Chuck Dixon a lot, but it is so much better than anybody gives it credit for. It is one of the best comic book series of the 90s, the Chuck Dixon. And DC has collected it all. So if you've never read it, do you want to wait to talk about it for your list or do you want to talk about it now? How about we wait? Let's wait, and then we'll hear your side of it.
Okay.
But this one almost didn't make my list either. I had about like three or four comics fighting for my number five.
Yeah.
And I just
this
I love
is such a good issue.
I love Nightwing, and I actually reread this yesterday. I read this issue yesterday.
It just make your heart sing. It makes me so happy.
I will tell you this: I reread every one of these issues.
Me too.
Yesterday, because when I read them, I wanted to make sure that I went, yeah, this. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready for people to tell me how wrong I am for this choice, mm-hmm. but I don't give a flying F. I give a flying Grayson.
That's right. that was very good.
Thank you. And it's just so, I think this issue just capitalizes on my love for Robin and my love for Nightwing. It's this issue. It's so simple. It's so amazing. It's just two boys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's no way to, like, I know I'm not selling it that well, but that's it. Like, Nightwing number 25.
It's a character. It's
so
like
amazing.
Confessions. It's a character study.
I would die to have an original piece of art from this issue.
Oh, man.
It would be so amazing.
I don't know if it'd be that expensive, to be honest, if yeah. he's got those pages.
So, but we were very similar. I you know, it's funny. I didn't think we would have any crossover.
God damn you. This is on my list.
I predict it's pretty
just
high.
Just gnashing my teeth.
I'm sorry. But it's great. I'm glad that we...
I think I have done this to you as well. I put something near the bottom of my list and it was the top of your list.
It's, so. It's all good. To me, that just tells our listeners that they should definitely read this one if we mm-hmm. both put... Imagine all the millions, and there are millions of comics issues out there.
Yeah.
And we both picked the same one.
Yeah.
That's astounding, actually. So, all right, what is your number four?
My...
1925?
No. spoiler alert, it's very high on my list.
That's what I figure.
my number four is an indie comic that I also read because Jason peer pressured me into it.
I don't mean to have a big head here, and I apologize. Are all these issues ones that I suggested to you?
Not all of them.
Okay.
But for people probably don't know this about me. One of my first jobs after I graduated was working in a comic book store. And then I worked at another comic book store. And around that same time was when you and I first met, and I had a lot of time to read a lot of comic books. And I was taking your suggestions, and I was taking suggestions from people like Major Spoilers, you know, like trusted sources.
Well, because it's something that a lot
of I just had free time to read. So I read a lot of comics around that time.
And something that a lot of people may not know about me that you have definitely found out is that I only buy a trade of something if I think it's great. And so I'm very, I don't buy trades of everything.
Yeah.
I buy trades of stuff that I think rocks.
So this is an independent comic. It's kind of scary. It's written by Stephen King's son.
Ooh, Joe
Hill. It's called Lock and Key Number One.
Oh, the very first issue.
It is so good.
Okay.
The first trade is very good as well. It's called Welcome to Lovecraft. I would really recommend just picking up the whole first trade because
it's great.
It's $9.99 or $14.99.
It's actually
very cheap.
I think it made our list for comic books you should read.
I definitely put it on there.
I think we both put it on there.
Because I think I read Lock and Key because you said you should read Lock and Key and it's great. And you read Lock and Key because Stephen Schleicher of Major Spoilers said you should read Lock and Key. It's great.
I have found that if Stephen Schleicher, by the way, if you're not listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, it is a great podcast. It's one of my favorite podcasts. I think it's a podcast I've listened to the longest. I've been listening to that podcast since like 2007.
For me too.
If Stephen Schleicher, the host of that show, says, read this comic book, and not just says it once, he'll bring it up several times.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. He's done that for me for Atomic Robo. Sixth Gun?
And you were going to bring up Sixth Gun.
Well, and also Matthew Peterson, a co-host of that show, was the one that told me about Astro City. I would never have found out about
Astro City without
Matthew Peterson.
Both of those men have been co-hosts of this show as well.
Guest
professors.
Yeah, yeah.
So go back in our feed and check those out. Lock and Key Number One. So
can I ask you a real quick question real quick?
Because
it's been a while since I've read Lock and Key. What happens near the ending, or what is the basic synopsis of issue one? Because I remember the trade. I remember what happens in the trade.
The end of issue one is where you learn that Tyler, the eldest son of the Locke family, had something to do with the recent
death of his father. Okay, that's the big twist.
It's a great hook. Tyler is an amazing character, and he's very sad. And in this first issue, he's this really damaged boy. And I promise you where he goes from there is so amazing. But Joe Hill, like I said, is the son of Stephen King. But I think he handles his character's emotions better.
Yeah.
And Tyler, I think, is a great example of it. Kinsey, the middle daughter, is not as well fleshed out here, unfortunately. And Bodhi, the youngest son, is really very sweet. But you get to see a little piece of their personality. And you get the basic hook of the series. Their father was recently murdered.
And there are keys in this house.
Their mother moved them back to his family home. And there's magical keys. And what could that possibly imply?
Does the ghost key appear in the first issue?
No.
Oh, damn it. That's my favorite key.
In
case you're wondering out there, people who have read Lock and Key, the ghost key is my favorite key.
The head key is my favorite key.
There you go.
So there you go. But I don't want to say more than that in case you've never read it. But really, just the very basic synopsis is set up here. But I just think it's so good. And Gabriel Rodriguez's art is like next level beautiful.
Why for you does this deserve to be on the top of the top in your list?
Because it's a great first issue. It tells you the hook. It's simple storytelling.
Okay.
There's not a lot of words on the page. I think for economy of storytelling, it deserves to be celebrated. I think the mystery is well planted. And I just think what it leads to is so incredible.
Cool.
And because it's hard to find, so just buy the trade.
Is it really? Is the first issue worth a lot of money?
There was low printing on it. It was an IDW original series.
Okay.
So the first printing.
Did not know that.
Yes. I don't know if it's slab worthy necessarily.
I mean, it's slab worthy just because it's a great series.
Right. But I just mean if you're going for
monitor. What a title.
Monitor.
Is it slab worthy?
I'm also not a huge fan of horror comics.
Sure.
It's just not a genre that sings to my soul. And this was the first horror comic that I read. I said, I'm going to read the first trade. Which really means I'll read the first issue and see how I feel about it. And even though it's intriguing, there's a good mystery, it is suspenseful, it's also whimsical, and a lot of that goes to the art, and it's beautiful, and it's a fairy tale. And I think that's what really grabs me about it.
I want to point out something that you just said that I think is such a great way to describe this list.
Mm.
It's an issue that sings to my soul. What a great, I would say that about every one of my choices.
Oh, there you go.
It sings to your soul. That's well put. Well put.
Thank you.
Any other final words on Lock and Key? Number one?
Number one.
Your Lock and Key number one is number four.
Yes. If you read it, I want to know. I want people to tell me because Lock and Key is so good. Tell me about your number four.
My number four, I want to start off with a quote from this that the main character in this issue says, and I think it's one of the most genius quotes that I've ever heard this character ever say. I heard a kid say that it would be fun to kill bad guys. Fun to kill. People have to know there's another way. They have to hear a voice of compassion and faith instead of spite and anger. That statement is said in Action Comics number 775, a storyline called What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way, written by Joe Kelly and drawn by Doug Monkey. This is a very famous issue of Action Comics, and it's a one-off. You don't need to know anything. Basically, this team called the Elite, led by Manchester Black, who is a British telekinetic, they're a team of superpower vigilantes, and they gain worldwide popularity for confronting terrorists and executing them. And they take to the fight to Superman, and Superman basically is made fun of, and everybody throughout the entire issue, there's an oversized issue, basically tells Superman, you're outdated, you're old, your morals don't work, which is the argument that we hear in the real world about Superman all the time.
I made that argument. It's wrong.
Yeah, I convinced you that argument is wrong.
Yeah.
And I hear it all the time, and it's an argument that as a Superman fan I hate, where people are like, Superman's outdated. Superman doesn't work. And it's like, no, Superman does work. It's the problem is that Superman is stronger than us. And that's why he's such a great character, because he does not bend, because the morals of compassion and kindness are never out of style. And Superman fights for that at every fiber of his being. This entire story is about that. It is about that Superman can't let this go. That Superman can't let these newfangled team. And this newfangled team basically was an homage to the Authority, which is Mark Miller and Warren Ellis's giant team that is basically the Justice League that just kills everybody and destroys the world.
You also enjoy.
It's a great comic book.
Yeah.
But it's also a popcorn comic book.
Yeah.
Because you're just watching it for the destruction. This is taking that idea and letting Superman confront it. And I think confronting Superman in this anniversary issue is such a genius move. Joe Kelly, one of the best Superman writers of all time, by the way. So how this story ends, and they made this into a movie. The movie's okay. It's called Superman versus the Elite. It's an animated movie. It's all right. It's not great. So basically, Superman challenges the Elite to a no-holds-barred to the end fight. And of course it starts out where they want to have the fight in the middle of Metropolis, and he goes, can we move this somewhere else? And they move it to the moon, and Superman endures a vicious beating at the hands of the Elite, and they appear to kill them, but then suddenly one by one by one all the members of the Elite are taken out silently, and Superman uses his X-ray vision and his heat vision to remove the part of Manchester Black's brain that gives him his telekinetic and telepathic abilities. He does it through his eyelids, which I think is one of the most badass Superman moves of all time.
He's like, hey, I got your laser. What's the laser eye surgery? Yeah.
Yeah, LASIK.
LASIK. Yep. Yeah, LASIK.
And then at the course, Manchester Black cackles. I'm basically giving you the entire story because I want to tell you how powerful it is. Manchester Black cackles. He's like, oh, I made you break your one rule. You killed us. You killed us. And Superman's like, no, I didn't. And he points, and not a single one of the Elite are dead. And Superman, in like a big splash page, amazing, amazing splash page that David Monkey says to Manchester Black, dreams save us. Dreams lifts us up and transform us. And on my soul, I swear, until my dream of a world where dignity, honor, and justice becomes the reality that we all share, I'll never stop fighting. Which I think is such an amazing, powerful thing for Superman to say. To me, there is no better example of a Superman comic book than Action Comics number 775. By the way, this issue is actually worth a lot of money now.
Slab-worthy?
It is slab-worthy. It's very slab-worthy. But this issue really speaks to my soul as well. It sings to my soul as a Superman fan. We were just in a comic book shop today. This issue sells unbagged for $40.
Wow.
So, yes, it's funny. I just got a collection of Superman comics books from a friend of mine. This issue was in there, and I was excited.
Oh, really?
I was excited that this issue was in there.
You going to slab it?
I don't think I'll slab it, because I don't think the copy's that good.
Mm-hmm.
But if I found a good copy of Superman 75...
You found, like, an 8 or higher?
Oh, yeah, a really
higher?
Good one? Yeah. I will tell you this... this is the highest Superman issue and the only Superman issue on my list.
Interesting.
Action Comics number 775 is just a genius. It takes the superhero medium and flips it.
Also, Doug Monkey art is like next level good. He's one of my favorite artists. He drew a really cool Tim Drake a couple times.
He's great. He's so underrated. And again, Joe Kelly, very underrated as a Superman writer, mm-hmm. because the period that he was writing Superman comics, Superman wasn't that popular.
Yeah.
So, but again, Superman is never outdated. When you fight for kindness and right, you're always in style.
Very Doctor Who.
Yep.
Feeling that we get right now.
Exactly.
Cool.
So there you go. That is my number four. Ashley, what is your number three?
My number three, I think, is an independent comic. Jason doesn't think is an independent comic, but that's okay. It is Fables,
not
number nine.
Comic.
Vertigo Comics, strictly speaking, independent comic book.
In the DC building.
Yeah, but...
Published by DC Comics.
However...
Number nine.
If you're not intimately familiar with what happens in every single issue of Fables, number nine is if you buy the nice, fancy hardback versions, it's the second to last issue in that first arc. It's the one where cover your little children's ears.
Uh-oh. Are we getting it? Don't make us explicit.
Snow White gets shot in the face.
Oh, my God.
At the end of this issue.
Whoa. Oh, by the way, we should warn you that there are going to probably be spoilers for every one of these stories, and too late.
Yes. Sorry, not sorry. I don't think I can speak about the importance of this issue, though, without bringing that up. This is not... I've never read Fables. I'm thinking about checking Fables out. Don't skip right to issue nine. Fables is a series that you can really just start at issue one and read forward from there.
Great issue, by the way, too, for Fables.
Great first mm-hmm. issue. Fables overall is a very well-crafted story. I know it goes a little walkabout in the middle there, but for the most part, very solid series. Issue 9, for me, I was into it up to that point, but that was what really solidified what I thought was interesting about the world. I know it draws comparisons now to Once Upon a Time for being fairy tales in the modern world.
Fables was ahead of that show by 10 years.
Yep. Fairy tales with edge, but Once Upon a Time never got this level of vicious. And Snow is a very important character before this, but how she comes back from it, because spoiler alert, it happens, and the implication of just exactly what they're up to in the larger Fables universe really comes out of this, and it's really very fascinating. This was the issue for me that laid bare what Fables was about, what was in store, and what I could expect. I almost put the issue at the end of their big fight in New York City where she's got her arms around Bigby's neck, but I really think this is more impactful. And from,
I think that's like issue 50-ish or something around there.
Yes, yeah. It's much later. But it's from this point forward, and Snow walks with a cane from this point forward, that she becomes the leader and the character that have cemented her in the canon of comic book characters as being not only a badass woman, but a badass character. And this is the reason why so many people who love Fables stick around, because Snow is such a great character. And this issue is all about the plot against her, what she's been doing, and then leaving you with a question of how you're going to come back from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the most important issues in Fables. Maybe next to when a bunch of babies are born, a bunch of issues down the road. And Snow is just so cool.
Why does this issue sing to your soul?
It sings to my soul because this is the issue where I realized how much I actually loved Snow and how important she was. Because
is it slab worthy?
Not in monetary value, it's not.
Okay.
Fables 1 would be. Jack of Fables 1 would be. 50 would be. That's probably about it. I don't know if Fables has a ton of slab worthy
nah, not really.
Issues, just to be honest.
I mean, if a TV show happens, it would be.
You'd be better off trying to sell a full run of single issues than trying to slab any of it. But because of what it does for Snow, it's my favorite issue of Fables, even though it ends horribly.
Wow. Yeah. This issue, I love Fables. Mm-hmm. This issue does not stand out to me.
It immediately came to mind when we were doing this list. Cool. I was like, I'm doing the one where Snow gets shot in the face.
Wow. For a character that you love, really love that she gets shot in the face.
Spoiler alert, she comes back. So, yes. And then read Fables. Fables is great.
Yep.
Jason, what's your number three?
My number three is a 13. It's a 13th issue, actually.
But it's Ultimate Spider-Man?
No. It is an issue about the story of Hob. I am talking about The Sandman, issue number 13.
Oh.
Written by Neil Gaiman with pencils by Michael Zulli, I think it is.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the story of Hob, but I'm not going to give you all of the story of Hob because many other people I bet are screaming at me, being like, why didn't you choose the William Shakespeare issue of Sandman? That's a great issue. But this is the one that spoke to me. This is the one that sings to my soul.
Tell me why.
So I'm going to tell you about Hob. Hob, our story in this issue, of course, Sandman is a very much anthology series by Neil Gaiman about a magical creature named Dream, mm-hmm. who lives in the Dreamland, and all his sisters and brothers, like Eternity and Death and all this kind of stuff, and Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
So in the late 1300s, in an English tavern, we see two pale customers come in and order drinks. One of them is Onerios and Telelut, better known to us as Dream and Death. And as they settle in, they hear a brazen young man named Hob announcing that he has no intention of dying, that people only die because they choose to. And Dream and Death are to say, you know, they're quite amused. And Death's like, I can take him at any time. And Dream asks his sister if she would entertain the man's notions and never come for him as long as he requests it. And she's like, yeah, sure.
Hashtag goals.
Yep. So Dream approaches the man and says, did I hear you had no intention of ever dying? Then let us meet here again in this very tavern in 100 years. And of course, all the people in the tavern, they're like, ha ha ha, yeah, 100 years.
That's how drunk people are.
Yeah, especially in the 1300s. And this sets off a very touching story to me of Hob and his never ending will to live. And basically, he shows us his life meeting Dream every 100 years in this tavern. The story is nothing but all the meetings mm-hmm. of every 100 years and seeing where Hob is in his life. At one time, they encounter William Shakespeare is in the tavern, and it's William Shakespeare before he's very famous. So, of course, Dream helps the writer out. There's one period of his life where his wife dies and he comes into the bar. He actually can't get into the bar because he's considered a peasant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the rich part of town. And Dream has to allow the guards to let him in. And Hob is like, I've hated every moment of the last 100 years. I've thought about killing myself because I lost my son and I lost my wife and I hate this earth. And Dream, of course, goes, do you wish to die? I'll let you go. And Hob goes, no, there's too much to live for. I'm not ready to die. And it's very interesting that it circles all the way up to 1889.
Mm-hmm.
And Hob really hasn't changed that much as a person. And he starts concluding that maybe the only reason that Dream has allowed him to live this long is because Dream himself is lonely. And this actually offends Dream a lot. And he says, why would I ever want the friendship of a mortal? I don't need you. I'm above you.
Mm-hmm.
And as Dream gets up to leave, Hob calls out, I'll tell you what, I'll be here in 100 years. And if you're here too, it'll be because we're friends and there'll be no other reason for why you're here. It won't be because of the game. It will be because we're friends. And Dream walks out of the bar, and I will leave you to wonder whether Dream returns or not and sees Hob in the year 1989 or not.
Why does this sing to your soul?
I just love this idea of this man going through the centuries because I kind of feel myself the same way where he's like, no, there's always so much to see. There's mm-hmm. always so much to do. There's always, I don't need to die. There's too many things to do and there's too many things to see and I don't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to live for. There's something profound in that statement that there's so much to live for. And the idea that this is almost a story of a friendship, that this immortal being needs us mortal beings as much as we need him. I don't know. To me, of all the issues of Sandman, it really stands out to me.
And you've read all of Sandman?
I have read all of
Sandman. I
thought so. I have read all of Sandman. There are some other issues. I briefly considered putting on the issue where William Shakespeare performs Midsummer's Night Dream for the actual characters that Midsummer's Night Dream is about. And that is, I believe, the only comic book that's ever won a Hugo Award, if I'm right. Yeah, and then they cut off comic books from there. They're like, comic books can't win this award anymore.
Neil Gaiman's like, look, I got some friends at the Hugo Award.
But I will say, I reread that issue, and I reread this issue. And this issue's the Sandman number 13, The Story of Hob.
I remember you telling me about this after you read it.
Yeah, spoke out to me way more than that issue. I don't know. I like the idea of Hob. And I will say this. There are references to this issue, to this very issue, throughout the rest of the series.
Cool.
It comes back to this tavern over and over and over again, which is really, I think, really cool for a long time series. So there you go. That's The Sandman number 13. Now, before we get to our number two, we have to thank our second sponsor for the episode. And I know a lot of you out there are like, why is there so many sponsors? Well, my friends, because it's the only way we can make this podcast better for all of you.
Yeah.
Now, Simple Contacts is our second sponsor, and they are the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and make sure that you can read the comic books that we're suggesting in this podcast. They let you reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century nerd. Now, this is how it works. All you got to do is you take this 5-minute simple contacts vision test online. It's through the phone. You have to stand like 10 feet away. You prop it up on a thing. I've done this test, and it sends this test to a doctor. When they see, like, are you blinking? Are you holding up one foot? Are you naked? We need to know. And they receive this test. They look at it, and then you get a renewed prescription, and you're able to reorder your contacts. It's like the simplest way to reorder the contacts. I actually stuck my tongue out during the entire test. They didn't say anything about that, but it has nothing to do with my vision, which is probably why they didn't do that. But it's designed by doctors and eye doctors to make sure your eyes look healthy and to make sure that your vision hasn't changed. And, you know, of course, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye exam. Go to a doctor, people. But you can get $20 off your first order of contacts at simplecontacts.com/geekhistory20 and then enter the code geekhistory20. That's because you're going to get $20 off your first order if you go to simplecontacts.com/geekhistory20. Don't forget to enter that code. Thank you so much to Simple Contacts for sponsoring this episode. Ashley, what's your number two? Number two, greatest single issue of comics of all time.
My number two is a number six.
You are number six.
I am number two.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
I don't think that's true. That's a prisoner joke for everyone out there. All-Star Superman number six.
All-Star Superman number six.
I talk about this issue a lot. It's brought up a lot. I got to talk about it on the DC Rebirth panel video, which was very strange. All-Star Superman, I believe, was also recommended in our best comics for new readers.
I'm not certain about that, but sure.
We definitely recommended
it. Let's say yes.
Before. I'm sure someone will tell me if I'm wrong. It's a really great story, but for me, this is the best issue of that story. And kind of like Confessions, for me, this really encapsulates what Superman is about, the way that, what was it, 775?
Yeah, 775.
Does for Jason. Issue 6 is the one where Superman has to go fight some Supermans from the future. And
the Sun Eater, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And while he is away, his dad has a heart attack, and he can't save him, and he dies. And it's really sad.
Pa can't.
I also think the death of Tim Drake's father and Identity Crisis is very sad. They both make me cry, but I think this is a much better crafted story, which is why it's in this place and not Identity Crisis. Also, I think people would harangue me if I put Identity Crisis on this list.
Who cares? Would you put Identity Crisis on this list?
No, I wouldn't have. I like Identity Crisis, though.
I did too, sure.
But people have weird feelings about that book.
Okay,
but in All-Star Superman number six, you learn that, and this is something that Jason has said, and I'm stealing, that if you want to make Superman hurt, you go for the heart. You go for the little things that he can't change, because it doesn't matter how super he is, he couldn't stop the... Can stop the cells from turning left instead of right inside his father's body. There's nothing that he could
he
do.
He can't change it. He can't fix a heart attack.
He can't punch something. You can't laser beam it away. And to see a god analog suffer a loss on that level, and in such a visceral way that we all understand, even if you haven't experienced it, you could empathize with what that feels like.
It shows
the brilliance of Grant Morrison.
Well, the heart attack is not a Grant Morrison invention. That had been around for a while. But
yes,
to me, it's really encapsulated with, there's an amazing line in Superman the movie, the 1978 Christopher Reeve movie, where Clark Kent at the funeral says, "All these amazing gifts I have, and I couldn't save him."
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's a great page in All-Star Superman 6 where he's racing
to get there.
It's racing, and it's in between the heartbeats,
yeah.
And he's not fast
enough.
He's
not, yeah. Which ordinarily should be fast enough.
Yep.
For anything,
mm-hmm.
And he still can't get there in time. And then you see him at the funeral later, comforting his mother. And he all of those gifts, he can't do anything for her. She's so distraught.
Yep.
And especially for a character who's already an orphan, even if he doesn't have a memory of his birth
parents.
An
orphan of a whole race.
Truly. To suffer that loss again, I think, is like monumental. And this issue illustrates the humanity in Superman, mm-hmm. and it brings him down to our level. And it shows that he is just as fallible as all of us. And it's, again, it's kind of like Confessions. Like, it's not particularly super. There is a fight in it. It's a fine fight.
It's like he's punching a sun.
Yeah. It looks beautiful, of course, because Frank Quitely, but it's
And there's a nice twist at the end of the issue, too.
There is, that I won't give away, because mm-hmm. hopefully people will read it. But I think it shows you who Clark Kent is, and it shows you that Clark Kent mm-hmm. is the real man, which is a nice ongoing debate that people like to have.
Yeah.
And it made me cry. So when I think about...
Great cover, too. It's Superman in crypto looking at the grave of Pa Kent.
Very sad. Very few comics have ever made me cry, so I thought it was worth including for that reason alone.
I think you, didn't you read this first because I gave you the single issues.
You literally put them in my hands. Yeah.
I still have them. I'll never sell those single issues.
They're slab worthy.
Oh, very.
The whole series is probably slab worthy.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Because it's so freaking good.
I got Grant Morrison to sign my number one.
Movie's not bad either.
Yeah. No, the movie actually is pretty good. The animated movie is pretty good, although it doesn't have this moment.
It doesn't, which, I understand. If you're going to cut something out, I can...
It's 12 issues, and you only got an hour.
Yeah. So it's right halfway through. And you can read it on its own if you want.
I think so. Every issue of All-Star Superman, you can basically read on its own.
Yeah.
Although
they work
better together
for the bigger picture, but if you've never read All-Star Superman before, you can definitely dip your toe in here.
Sure.
And if you find it meaningful, then check out the rest of the series. Jason, what is your number two?
My number two is a chance encounter about two men in an airport bar. And it happens in Preacher issue 18.
I knew you were going to put Preacher on here somewhere.
This, in my opinion, is the greatest issue of Preacher. Jesse Custer, the preacher who has the power of Genesis inside him, he says the words and he can make anybody do what they can. He's searching for God because he found out that God has left heaven. Well, this issue has nothing to do with that. He's getting ready to fly to Europe to save his friend Cassidy, and he's sitting in a bar, an airport bar, and he sits down next to an African-American man, and he's smoking a cigarette, because that's when you could smoke in airports, and he puts down a lighter that says F communism,
mm-hmm.
which is his father's lighter,
mm-hmm.
and the man beside him puts down a lighter that says F communism as well, and the man, who is named Billy Baker, who is dreamed of going to space, looks at Jesse and thinks that he's John Custer, his dad.
Mm.
And you find out that Billy Baker served with his dad in Vietnam. And so the whole issue is just Jesse and Billy Baker sitting at the bar and Billy Baker telling Jesse about his dad. His dad, who Jesse has not seen since his dad was killed when he was 9. So Jesse is learning about all these pictures. And one of the most amazing moments of the issue happens very early on, in like the first 5 pages. Billy has a picture of his 3 pals from Vietnam, which John and their other buddy, Ghani, in his wallet. And he gives it to Jesse. And Jesse just holds on to it and looks like it's precious metal. And Billy's like, "Oh, what's the deal?" And he's like, "Never seen a picture of your dad before?" And he goes, he's like, "I didn't know there were any pictures of my dad."
Mm.
You know, And so Billy tells him the story about how they got the lighter. It was when John Wayne visited their unit in Vietnam, and then how it led to the worst 10 minutes of their life when a stupid LT sends them in to check into a civilian village and more men of their unit get killed than they want. And there's an interesting thing that Billy tells the whole story, tells about this very, and I won't give you all the details of the story, but at the end of it, Billy says, oh, that's a story I've never told anybody else. I've never told that story before. But he's like, I feel like it's right to tell you. And he says, because I've never had a friend like John Custer, your dad. And I just think it's such a sad story of a son and a man and war and loss in an airport bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so completely, like, it has nothing to do with the whole ongoing narrative of Preacher, which is a series that I really love. And mm-hmm. I think has a strong narrative. But it's so strong. And Billy gives Jesse the picture of his dad and lets him keep it. And Jesse will not keep it. Jesse's like, I can't take this from you. And he's like, no, it means more to you. Take mm-hmm. it. And I think he says something like, I'll have the memories.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with Jesse gets the call for his plane. He has to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so he takes off, and it just ends with a shot of Billy Baker sitting at the bar, looking at the F communism lighter and thinking about this guy. And it comes with a quote from an unnamed soldier from a book called NAM mm-hmm. by Mark Baker. And the quote is, thinking about Vietnam once in a while in a crazy way, I wish that just for a while I could be there and then be transported back, maybe just to be there. So I'd wish I was back here again.
Mm.
And again, this is a story, an issue about how these two men connected in a more powerful way probably than any other point in any other people in their entire life, and how this guy, Billy Baker, who had never even thought about John Custer, had never even considered John Custer in over a decade,
mm-hmm.
you know, even longer, can connect to his son, and how the son can learn more about his father. I just think it's like, it nearly makes me cry thinking about the issue. And I think it is without a doubt the single most greatest issue of Preacher. And it has nothing to do with the main story. And that's what I want from single issues of comic books. So
cool.
There you go. It really spoke to my soul. And I hope I brought you all down. So there you go. Why did you think I was going to put Preacher on here? I mean, I know I've talked about my love of Preacher several times, but
I just know from knowing you how important Preacher is to you. Mm-hmm. And I know you've reread it in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And
about the absolutes.
Yeah.
Great.
I just thought it would probably be Preacher. There's a few comics that I think for you are definitive, and I think Preacher is one of them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that as a list. What do we think are the most definitive comics
about the other person? Sure.
I'm actually going to write that down. I think that's a great episode idea. And please let us know on Twitter.
Yeah, you could tweet us at GHL Podcast, geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson. Just head over there and let us know if you want us to psychoanalyze each other in what we think are definitive comic book stories, and probably learn some uncomfortable facts about your teachers.
Oh, no.
Here at the Mind University.
All right, we're here, Ashley. We are here at the number one, the greatest single issue of all time, according to us. I'm sorry.
You ruined my
life. I know. I'm sorry. I have no idea. What is it? What's your number one? I have no idea.
Don't do that to me. it's The Boys, but not that horrible, horrible Garthetta story.
It's not terrible. It's all right. It's not good.
It's not for me. Yeah. I'm not the target audience, yeah. Which is why I won't read it.
Nightwing 25.
Yeah. Tim Drake and Dick Grayson are probably my two favorite comic book characters, and to get to see them, I don't know if you could tell from the rest of my list, but I like it when characters are introspective and kind of sad, and that's what this is. And I think the relationship between Dick and Tim is very ignored. It suffered a lot of neglect recently, in particular in the wake of Damian, because it made more sense narratively for him and Dick to share a bond. But Tim is my ride or die Robin, and I really like getting to see them interact this way. I love anytime the Robins can find common ground, because it's such a singular, weird experience, even more than being Batgirl or one of the other auxiliary.
Because there's only like six people in the entire multiverse that have ever done what you've done.
And this was the first time I'd read this kind of story for these two characters. And that was still in an age where we weren't comfortable narratively with letting young men connect to each other in that way, because God forbid we thought someone was gay or whatever. And I just think it's a beautiful moment. I love Dick as a big brother
to Tim.
To any of them,
he's
really.
Actually, yeah, he's a big brother to all the Robins.
But especially to Tim. Jason could use a few more moments with him, I think.
They talk about Jason Todd in that issue,
actually.
They
do, yeah. But I don't know if Jason would be open to that, but like I would love to see that kind of story. And also, I had seen, by the time I read this, I had seen Robin's Reckoning a number of times. And this to me is very similar to that type of story. And I love that story for the same reasons. So yeah, it's hard for me. I don't know if it's maybe as perfectly or as singularly crafted as some of the other things that I mentioned, but it's truly like my two favorite comic book characters looking out for each other and connecting and talking about what makes them so cool. And you can't ask for more than that. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's standalone.
Both of their best costumes too.
Oh, yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. And the art is great. And Chuck Dixon is flawless at this time. So it's just, it's everything I love about comics in a single issue.
Mm-hmm.
Really. So had to be the top of my list.
Cool.
You had to put it at the bottom of your list. tell me about.
Well, I want to make an observation real quick.
Sure.
And you'll learn more when you learn what my number one is.
Okay.
You picked very simple stories, like stories that were very simple. Mm-hmm. And I picked stories that were like punches in the gut.
Mm-hmm. But we both picked.
It's very interesting.
We both picked character pieces. We didn't pick big, fighty, punchy action.
Or the end of a season finale.
Right, which are all great and are things that we've read and loved. And I'm sure
like
we could
Blackest Night number 7.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could do a whole other podcast on the best action scenes in comics or whatever.
Oh, we could. Yeah.
But like, it's interesting. So even though we've picked different things, like they're not dissimilar in our style, I guess.
Well, there was a brief time where I considered putting the final issue of Preacher on this list, but I was like, you don't get that unless you get the whole series.
Yeah.
Which I was very insistent on, like, no, it should be able to, you should not have to read anything else and still get the power from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Tell me about your number one.
What do you think of this? I'm just very curious. Do you have any guesses or even the series that it might be from?
I really thought, I know All-Star Superman is not on your list, but I really thought it would have been from All-Star Superman.
All-Star Superman almost made it on here, and not even the issue that you picked.
I swear to God, if you put Wildcats on the top of this list, I'm going to come over to this table.
Oh my God. Spawn number one. Oh my God, that's so great.
Had to take some of the tension out of the room.
Oh man.
Wildcats.
That's 15.
Is it, tell me this and then tell me what the issue, is this something that you've talked about before?
Yes.
Okay, tell me what it is.
Astro City.
I thought it might have been an Astro City.
Half or 0.5.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. And the reason why it's a 0.5 is because back in the day, Wizard Magazine did specific comic books where you had to order them through Wizard, and you had to pay like $5 and get mail. And they were always like halves. They were like one. It was before Marvel did 0.5.
Let me tell you, trying to categorize those things and catalog them at a POS, pain in the butt.
Oh, yeah. It's a pain in the ass. And it's a shorter issue than normal. Like, I think it's only like 12 pages.
Yeah, probably.
Because comic books were 24 back in the day. It's collected in Astro City Volume 2. Why they put it there, I don't know.
Probably because they needed to fill out the page count.
Sure. It has nothing to do. But this is a one and done. And I'm basically going to tell you the entire story because it's so powerful without even reading it. And it's, for me, it's without a doubt the greatest single issue of all time. There's a man named Michael Tenachek. And for some reason, every time he goes to sleep, he dreams about a woman that he has never met. He sees her every night. He can hear her voice. And he's desperately in love with her. He has no idea who this woman is. And he even resorts to drugs to stop dreaming about her. Eventually, this Astro City character named the Hanged Man, or the Hanged Man, who's sort of this mystical Dr. Fate-ish type character, because all of these superheroes in Astro City are sort of homages or representations of other known superheroes. He tells Michael Tenachek that there was a battle with a time-traveling supervillain named the Timekeeper that broke the time continuum and reality. And the heroes beat this villain, but when they reset reality and they reconstructed reality, the woman who was his wife in this present version of reality ceased to exist because in this new reality, her grandparents never met each other.
Mm.
So the hanged man has come. The hanged man, excuse me. I don't know why I say the hanged man.
You can
man.
Say hanged. Neither is
I like
incorrect.
Hanged. It sounds a little bit more mystical.
Mm.
So the hanged man offers to erase these dreams for Michael. But Michael decides to keep the dream because even though in his current reality he never knew her, he can still dream about how much he loved her.
He can keep her alive.
He can keep her alive. And to me, this is the perfect mix of comic books. It's time travel and love. And I love that he knows her and he loves her. And the love like bleeds through realities.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that like this is the ultimate idea of like, oh, man, we saw these time. How many times time has been. We talk about it in Geek History Lesson all the time about the Marvel retcons and Crisis on Infinite Earths mm-hmm. and Annie Monitors farting out new universes. We talk about it all the time.
Right. And then forget about the Flash TV show.
Exactly. This is. The real
consequence yeah.
of something like that.
And well, on Arrow,
yep.
Babies switch genders. Babies were never born.
Yep. And so it was written by Kurt Busiek and drawn by Brent Anderson, who is the longtime mainstay artist of Astro City. It's perfect. I think that this issue, it's so sad. And the interesting thing is about it is that Astro City just ended its current single issue run in Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And Kurt did a sequel to the story.
Is it over forever now?
No, they're going to move it to where it's only graphic novels now.
Oh, so good.
So instead of single issues,
it's going to be the Japanese model.
It's going to be like every year or every 6 months, you're going to get like, here's 90 pages.
Oh my God, they're moving to the future, the
Which
way comics
great.
Should be made.
I'm so excited about it.
Great.
It just because apparently it'll fit in their schedules better.
Great.
But the final two issues of the single issue series that they were doing for Vertigo was a sequel to the story. And I'm going to tell you how much the story joins Michael... years down the road, so he's now an old man.
Mm-hmm.
And he has started a superhuman trauma group where people that have suffered either accidents or injuries or lost people because of superhero battles, and he gathers the group. And then anytime there is a superhero emergency in the city, he runs and volunteers and helps them. And then the story, the two-issue story, is about people finding out that he never had a wife and then having to decide whether or not they believe whether he's just making it up for attention or not.
Oh, wow.
And he has to come to grips with these people, whether he cares whether these people believe that he ever had a wife or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. And I will say the hanged man comes back in a very, I don't want to twist it, but I thought it was so appropriate that he decided to make a sequel to the story as the finale of Astro City. But if you've never read this issue, and actually I think you should totally read this issue, it is so sad. I love the idea that this dude loves his wife so much that he loves her through time. I think that's amazing. I think it's a great, I don't know. It's the greatest single issue of all time.
That's a good pitch.
Astro City, a half. 0.5, whatever the hell you want to call it. I hate that too, but whatever. It's in the second volume.
We'll call it issue zero.
Yeah. So there you go. Those are all our single issues right there. You can find, we're going to do the top three.
And if we can't find the single issues, then we will share the collections they're printed in.
For my links, I'm going to have the collections.
Great.
Just because...
it's often easier once the issues are out of print to get them that way.
Yes, exactly. Like I have the collections that these single issues
Great.
Are in.
Then you'll buy those collections.
So there, you can find that over where, Ashley?
At geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. We have all the recommended reading we've ever recommended that you read. Back to issue episode zero. You go there, you check out the widget, you get the book that you're most interested in, and a little bit of support comes back our way.
Yes. I gotta say real quick before we move on into the honor roll, I thought this episode was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this episode was so hard to decide these five issues, but I had a lot of fun doing this. So let's go into the honor roll. What is that, Ashley?
The honor roll is where if you are an amazing person who heads on over to iTunes
or Apple Podcasts
and
I think it's called Apple Podcasts now, that's why I said that.
Who knows? I don't. And gives us a 5-star review. We'll read whatever you write.
Yes.
Thank you.
The first person that is going to join the honor roll is Archangel X, who says, I'm a pilot. It's taking me too long. That's a whole joke. That's an old joke. Hal Jordan joke. Archangel X says, it's taking me too long to do a review. Ashley and Jason are knowledgeable, funny, and entertaining, and all for the low, low price of free. That's true. And cover a wide range of pop culture nerdery. It's like a fun Cliff Notes hour plus of topics, complete with suggestions for your own delving into the subject matter. Jupiter Jet, their comic, is a great all-ages comic I've been sharing with my niece, and following them on Twitter is a great input into my feed. Thank you, Major Spoilers, for introducing him to me. P.S. Any plans for Magneto? Hopefully? I would love to teach a Magneto X-Men lesson. We just got to find the right time.
Have we done a Magneto episode yet?
I don't think we have. I don't know. We've done 227 of these, and now we've started forgetting what ones we've done.
Yeah, I forgot recently that we did a Harley Quinn episode.
The next person that's going to join the honor roll is Sean Strawbridge, who says, you need these lessons in your life. I love this podcast. Whether listening in the car, at work, or while relaxing in the Hall of Justice, you're sure to be educated in all things geek-related by hosts Jason and Ashley, who bring their passion for the subject matter to the forefront with humor, honesty, and a deep appreciation for whatever medium they happen to be discussing. Their deep dives into character histories and communities, will give ever longtime fans an expanding understanding, and greater appreciation for everything from comic book characters to Doctor Who. Essential listening for everyone from the casual reader to the hardcore fan. Highly recommended.
Thank you.
So Sean Strawbridge and Archangel X, thank you so much for those reviews. You get the key to the your name is going to be on the honor roll. You get 3 stars next to it. You're also going to be given the key to the teacher's lounge, and whatever you do, do not touch the banana. That is Mrs. Schwalbuck.
What does she teach again?
She teaches woodworking.
Good for her.
Mrs. Schwalbuck. She teaches woodworking. She's
nice Jewish lady.
Yes, she's very Jewish, and I will say that she built our kitchen table.
She makes amazing kugel.
She makes a what?
That's a Jewish dessert.
Okay, cool. Anyway, so there you go. Head on over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever the Apple thing is called now. Give us a 5-star review. You're going to get to join the honor roll. And while you're over there, don't forget to download and subscribe to this podcast, because we've got some amazing episodes out there right now. If you go over to our patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, our Geek History Lesson Extra episode, which is an extra podcast that you can only listen to on Patreon. It's for our Patreon supporters. We're going to talk about single issues that almost made it on our list, and why this was the hardest Geek History lesson ever, probably to ever write. I'm not joking. This was probably the hardest one, and I thought the Batman chronological timeline one was hard.
I said it was a dessert. It's not as a pasta.
So there you
I
go.
Apologize.
Also, don't forget about our Kickstarter for our new comic book Science.
It's out
now. Help us make our second comic book ever, and get yourself the book and get yourself some really cool rewards. ScienceComicBook.com. And go follow the podcast on Twitter at GHL Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, and follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And if for some reason, if you don't know, we do have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jawin. Same spelling. We do all kinds of stuff like that. Hashtag stick around. Ashley, really quickly, without talking about lists that we didn't put on our lists, because we're going to say that for the Patreon episode. Any series you're surprised that I didn't put on? Real quick, is there any series that you're surprised that I didn't make it on?
I'm surprised you didn't have a Spidey on there, or a new X-Men.
A new X-Men, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I'm surprised you don't have a Batman, or an actual issue of Robin. I'm actually really surprised that Tim Drake Robin didn't make it on your list.
But I got a 2-for-1.
I guess.
I got a 2-for.
Okay. You got a 2-for. And speaking of 2-fers, this has been Geek History Lesson. I am Jason, sing to your soul, Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
This episode is definitely slab worthy.